tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Good morning, welcome along to Tip Today. Coming up on today's programme, another packed show for you. We hear from the River Shore Suicide Watch, a Tipperary man whose personal data was breached, John Bubbles O'Dwyer, and Jamie McCormick chat about their new businesses. Mercy on the Mall. We have Lynch Solicitors providing us with some sound legal advice. And of course, Trudy O'Leary has some great winter holiday tips. Trudy Waters is by the phone. She's ready to take your calls. It's a free phone number. It won't cost you a cent. 1800 938 007. Of course, you can text on 083 311 3311. And now we have not one but two prizes to give away this week. Firstly, we have a 7 foot tall fresh Christmas tree courtesy of Pine Nurseries in Burncourt, the one stop shop for your Christmas tree this Christmas. As well as that, we're celebrating a Necco Shoes promotion at Moroni's Footwear in Clonmel. We have a €25 voucher to give away each day this week. And then the daily winners will go into a draw on Friday for the grand prize, which is a pair of those very comfy Echo shoes. Let's have a look at what's making headlines today. Forensic investigators are at the scene of a crash in County Wexford in which a family of four died last night. A couple in their 70s and their two sons were killed when their car collided with a truck on the N25 near New Ross. Tesla is planning to improve services at an open residential centre in Tipperary. The Child and Family Agency says the planned developments will align services at St. Joseph's School near Clonmel with the identified needs of children and young people. And a ban on the sale of smoky coal could be extended countrywide by 2019. The Independent Climate Change Advisory Council will issue a report this morning which recommends banning coal and peat to make up for Ireland's failure to tackle climate change. Now, to begin the programme today, every weekend a group of volunteers patrol the banks of the River Shore to try and prevent tragedy. River Shore Suicide Patrol walks along the banks of the river in Clonmel from midnight to near 4 a.m. on watch for those who may be in a vulnerable position and would like to speak to somebody or indeed just see a friendly face. Tip FM's Amy Ryan headed out with the volunteers over the weekend.
We will be out in all weathers. It doesn't matter rain, hail or snow. We're out the Friday, Saturday and Sunday night. And we're out from 12 until whatever time. Could be 4, could be 5. And our phone is open. And 7 days a week. So all you have to do is leave a text, leave a message. If they're not feeling well, not having a good day, you know. I make every effort to contact June and Pamela to see who's available to come with me. Because, to be honest, you always need two people. You don't go on your own. You always need two people, you know, to attend anybody that's having a bad day.
It's 3 degrees Celsius on the 1st of December. Most people are tucked up at home after watching the Late Late Toy Show. But for June, Jacinta, Pamela and Colm of the River Shore Suicide Patrol, the night is just beginning. Jacinta Mullins tells us about the previous weekend.
Last Saturday night was one of the coldest nights that I have witnessed being out, and we've been out in bad weather. And that's why, you know, when you see someone homeless, you have to go and assist and try and help. You can't. He was actually blue. His hands and all were blue.
And what did you do?
We got him tea, and we got him tea, and we got him food, and then we went off and got him cardboard out of the bins, and then some good Samaritan came along at 2:30 in the morning and brought down a blanket for us.
The River Shore Suicide Patrol was set up in 2016 following the death of two young adults in Clonmel. June Luby felt that a presence was needed at the river to prevent the town from losing any more lives to the currents. Here's June Luby.
This was set up because tomorrow is a young lady's anniversary. She'll be dead 2 years. In 6 weeks after that, another young boy lost his life to the river. So I decided we'd call a meeting and see if people would come on board. We're only out because of the public, which I would like to thank, because only for them we wouldn't be here at all, because we don't get any funding from any government organisation. So since the public is keeping us out here at the moment with our gear, and our insurance is 800 a year, so that we'll probably have to do a few fundraisers next year just to get the insurance for next year. But for the time being, we're fine, and I have to thank the public for that. Other than that, we wouldn't be here at all, wouldn't be out.
We felt that the youth in the town needed a bit of our help, so we come down by O'Keefe's basically mostly on the Saturday night, where, you know, there's a lot of people out and they're vulnerable, and we pay to help to get them home in taxis and help them get off the streets. And to be quite honest with you, the youth in the town are not a bother to us. They're very good, you know. They don't cause any hassle with us, and they listen to us, and they know that we're there if they need us to talk to, you know, which is very important. Because without us being out, there would be no help there for the youth, the teenagers, you know. And it's making a benefit, and and the park used to have a lot of teenagers over there, even in the summer. Now that's gone. They're not over there like they used to be. You know, they see us coming with the lights, they're gone.
You also mentioned that in the recent storms and bad weather that you helped some homeless people around the town as well.
There were no help there for them until we came out and we helped them. There were no help there from the time we came out after 12 o'clock. And, you know, that is the most vulnerable time, where they have nowhere to sleep and they have no food. So we helped get them, you know, a blanket and getting food, just to keep them comfortable for tonight in some way.
And then if you were buying food for homeless people or paying for taxis for people who need it, where is the money coming from?
Mostly out of our pocket.
Yeah.
It comes from us. We chip in maybe something every weekend, and that gets them out. There is a soup kitchen in town, but it's kind of at 12 o'clock when we come out. Sometimes you meet them and sometimes they have no place to go. The issue is we don't, unfortunately, can't carry sleeping bags with us, so sometimes we just put the word out and people are good to come down and they'll give us the sleeping bags and that. With the weather that's supposed to be coming in December, I would like, if the council can't home them or can't get them a bed, I can understand addiction, and a lot of the B&Bs can't deal with them. Maybe if they even had a sleeping bag in the county councils, that would just keep them warm and keep them comfortable, instead of us having to go through skips to get cardboard for them. Because it's hard to go home knowing that there's somebody out there cold, lonely and on their own. They're still human beings. They still have their dignity. And hopefully in a couple of years' time, the lads, a group of us, might get together and we're going to try and see, can we get a building where they can have a bed, maybe just a shower, and a proper bite to eat in the heat. They get it on Tuesdays and Fridays in the railway station, but we would like to see something, maybe a refuge or something that they can go just to have a bit of dignity and sit down and maybe have a chat. Because maybe sometimes that's all, they mightn't even want food. It might be just a hello, how are you? We've had two are gone to treatment. Like the youth, if they get involved, and like if we have someone here in trouble, we have to deal with them on a footpath, as you can see, where it is public and people are looking. Unfortunately, we haven't got the funds to rent a place in town. We wish we had, that we could bring them, but at the moment we can't. We're doing our best out here, and that's all we can do, and hopefully
I would like to see a premises where, because I think if you can get them into a premises and you can have their a talk with them and a proper talk, some of them are really willing to go for treatment. We have one boy that's going out at the moment and hopefully that will work out. Another boy is after being through treatment and he's out. So it doesn't make a difference to me if they have addictions. Some of them mightn't have anything. It might be a mental health problem. They might have problems at home. To me, I don't look down on anyone. I'll help anyone. I wouldn't see anyone down or out or cold. That's just in my nature and that's just the way I am.
It's not all about, you know, we like to speak to people on the street. It's not all about, we ask how their night is going. And, you know, and you meet different people, different characters. So it is nice, you know. They're sad. You can see by their eyes they're sad, you know, and it's not a nice place to be. And I just couldn't go home knowing that they had no food or they hadn't got some kind of a bedding to lie down for the night, you know. And it's really gone bad, you know. Clamel, people don't think they're homeless people out there, but they are, you know. And you know, a lot of them have addiction, a lot of them have mental health, a lot of them have different issues going on at home. So, you know, you just have to listen to what they have to say, you know, and make them feel that someone do care.
The parents need to know, I'm afraid, the dangers that are out here. We haven't, I suppose my eyes were opened up. I suppose I knew a little bit about it, but when we came out, my eyes were open to see the dangers that are out there at the moment. And that's probably from 13 years up, unfortunately to say.
And what do you perceive as the most dangerous things that are facing young people right now?
Drugs is a big issue, unfortunately. Tablets from the internet. Probably smoking weed. Maybe some people say weed is not too bad, but it's what they take with it is the problem. Vodka, big issue amongst them. The shots and the spirits out there, that would be the big issue. And then you have probably 18, I've probably a very bad heroin addiction in the town at the moment, unfortunately. And once they get onto heroin, it's a very hard drug to come off of. And then you have to wait 6 weeks to be clean, to get into a treatment centre. And that doesn't work sometimes. Unfortunately, they just got caught up in the grips of things. As I'd say, maybe, and they tell you, the first hit, you never get the same again. That's what they'll be always looking for, the same thrill as the first time, but it doesn't happen. So I know the guards are doing their best, under-resourced, like everything. The government cut funding for this, that. So they're doing their best as well. The A&E department are under stress up there as well, but I have to say, if we go up there, they have been good to us. What I'd hope, and there's a new forum, a mental health forum starting up in town. We were at a meeting the other night. We know St. Michael's probably be 10 years before we get something like that opened again, but maybe just instead of a person that have suicidal thoughts or just a bit down, having to sit in A&E for maybe an hour and a half, waiting for psychiatric team to come and waiting to get see the nurse, to get bring them into a private room. And if we have to wait for the psych team to come for 5 hours, that doesn't matter, because they're in a private room and they're kind of, they're away from everybody. You know, if it's not nice to see, if there's people up to sick and you're sitting there with bad thoughts going through your head and you think everyone is looking at you, some of them are not inclined to go there. But when we do go up there, if it's like everywhere else, you have to wait your 5 hours, that's no problem if it was in a private room.
You mentioned there St. Michael's closing down. Do you think that has really affected Clonmel Town?
Oh, very, very bad effect on the town. Maybe we should have spoke up when the time, we didn't realise how much the effect would be on it. Kilkenny isn't ideal to be sending people away from near their families and home. You have a follow-up thing in the morning. Sometimes they leave them home. They follow them up in the morning. Maybe that's too late.
Cullum Conran joins the group whenever he can. He explains his personal motivation for helping others.
The main reason I started the suicide patrol is because what the girls are out here fighting for, I've gone through everything and I've came out the other side. And I'm not obliged to do it, but I feel I'd like to give something back. And this is my way of doing it. That's the main reason that I'm out here tonight. And I'm out here in Jerry Ness, I can be. A lot of the stories and stuff that we see, I've been through. And some of the times, it can bring up memories, bad memories. But it's just, it's something I've learned now to take on the chin at this age. You know, because there's so much of it. You know, it's not just you hear maybe once every week or once every month. You hear it all the time, all these stories. So, yeah, it can be hard. It can be tough. But the reason that I'm here is because I've seen it all. I've done it all. And if it wasn't for these girls, a lot of people wouldn't get through it.
Would you have found that in your own experience as well, that there are people who are working on a voluntary basis like this are often the people who are there when you need them?
That's a hard one to answer, because when I was going through it, there was none of this. You know, like, I found it hard to get into anywhere. I was on the streets. I never had the help that the guards had given people. Or places go, counselling to go. Everything was waiting. And I'd say it's probably, I'd say what a lot of the people on the town wouldn't agree with is the waiting. I don't think none of us can agree to the waiting for certain things. So, yeah, that's the killer, is the waiting. If we didn't have the waiting, we wouldn't have this problem. We probably would have the problem, but not as much.
Tip FM's Amy Ryan out and about for us with the River Shore Suicide Patrol. She was speaking there to Cullum Conran, to June Luby, to Pamela Hallahan, and Jacinta Mullins as well. And if you are a loved one, is in need of help with mental health issues, Samaritans are always available on 116123, and that's a free phone number. It's 116123, or you can go to mentalhealthireland.ie for a full list of helplines there.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP today. It's 25 minutes past nine right now. Helen is online with me. Good morning to you, Helen.
Good morning, Brian.
Helen, you were kind enough to text us in about River Watch. You say they do so much work and they call to make sure that people are okay afterwards.
That's right, Brian. Yes, they do.
How did you get to know about them, Helen?
Well, I got to know about them through my daughter. My daughter was very unwell, and not through that daughter, but through another daughter. She let me know about June and Jacinta. It would be June and Jacinta that I would know better, but I know that the whole team work hand in hand. And I had a daughter that was very unwell through addiction. And one second, Nelson.
I'll take your time, Helen. No problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I could do something there.
No problem at all, Helen. You were saying you had a daughter who's in the... has she addiction issues even now?
She, at the moment now, Brian, she's in treatment.
Is she? Yeah.
Yeah, she was very bad in addiction, and June and Jacinta used to call to her, and, you know, if she kind of might be missing for a little bit of a while. And when I got in touch with them, you know, they used to call to make sure she was okay, and they'd knock at the door, and then they'd get in touch with me. I mean, you know, that's the way they work. They do more than just the River Watch, you know. They do a lot of others. They'd get in touch with you, kind of, and they'd talk you through, you know, because people think that people with addiction have no family behind them, which a lot of them do.
Sure.
But you see, you're so frazzled friend from the whole lot of it. Like, in the end, you said, there's no more I can do, because, you know, you would have done everything that you could. You know, you would have done everything from giving them money, from giving them money to pay off bills that they owed for the addiction, from everything, you know. In the end, all you'd give is food. You know, that's all you'd give in the end, because you couldn't give money in the end, because you'd know that that would be going on the wrong thing, you know. So then when June and Jacinta kind of got involved with me, and they were a great help, you know, they kind of put your mind at ease. And in the end, I had to let go of her. And
did
in
you?
The end, she decided, yeah, now this is her second time in treatment, but she's doing very well, Fran. She's doing excellent.
And when you say you had to let go of her, Helen, what do you mean by that?
I mean, I had to stop giving.
Yeah.
You know, I was her crutch, you know.
Yeah. As they say in addiction terms, you were enabling her, I suppose.
I was enabling her all the time, yeah. And I had, you know, one of family members said, you know, you have to stop, you know. But it's very hard to stop when it's your own child, friend, you know.
It must be almost impossible to do, Helen.
Well, when you see your child nearly dying in front of your eyes, friend, it's almost impossible, you know. But I had to do it, you know. I had to do it because I couldn't. It's very frustrating as well, friend, you know. You want back your beautiful child, like, you know. You want this child that was so quiet growing up and so, you know, so beautiful. And you just want your child back the way they were. And this addiction is after taking over, you know. And you know, this isn't the real person.
And I was just going to say that to you. Does it totally change a personality, Helen?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And, you know, and moves totally away from the family, you know. And they get another family, if you know what I mean.
Which is other drug users and suppliers.
That's right, yeah. And then come back and say, you know, and I'd ring every day and I'd stay in touch and, you know, always. And I can tell you, friend, I broke down doors. I did everything, all those kind of things.
Did you?
You know, I did, Jeff, friend. I did all those kind of things. You know, she's dead now, she's dead. And then I just stopped doing all those kind of things, you know, friend. Because, like, I had to leave it in the hands of God in the end. And when I pulled back, for some strange reason, she kind of made the decision to go. She said, this is no life or whatever. I don't know. I had no hand act or part in it anyway, in the end, only that I pulled back.
And did you come across some unsavory characters through Helen, people who were supplying her and people who you had to pay off, Helen?
No, I didn't ever directly.
Yeah, but you gave her money to do so.
I stayed away. She met lovely people. She met a lovely girl. I won't give her name. She met love. In the end, she was homeless, like, I will say.
Was she?
In the end, she was, she was homeless. She was homeless in her own hometown, friend.
In Clonmel?
You know, in Clonmel, she was homeless.
My God.
But a lovely girl took her in. I won't give her name now on the radio.
No, I understand.
You know,
but that must have been very hard for you to...
Very hard, friend. You know, that was her second time homeless.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't take her in for reasons that I won't go into now.
Okay.
But, I wouldn't be able to live with it anyway, Fran. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't be able, but this lovely girl who was very kind took her in and, you know, they left her stay there so that, you know, she was good and she was kind and, you know, for that, I'll always be grateful to her.
Do you think, did it get so bad with your daughter that she might have considered taking her life, do you think?
Oh, sure, she was always considering that, Fran. She was always considering it.
God,
you know, she'd have been many times up in A&E and she was always saying, I'd be better off gone, like, you know. So you were living on kind of this thing, like, Sheila called during the night and you didn't hear the phone, it was on silent. And then the following morning you were trying to ring and you got no answer. You were jumping into the car, you know, oh God, this is it now, you know, that's the way you were living. And I would have had... Where will I put this now? Because I had the family involved. I would have had another tragedy in my life in that area, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I wouldn't want to, you know, so the way it was, you were kind of living.
Sounds to me, Helen, like you were living an ordinary life and you had all the joys of children and all of that. And then suddenly this addiction thing, like, obviously consumed a lot of your life then, did it?
Oh, it took over my life in the end, you know? It took over. It just absolutely... it takes you over, friend, yourself. You know what I mean? It just, you see, addiction doesn't affect just one person.
Yeah.
It's the ripple effect, you know? Do you know, it's the ripple effect of the, everybody then ends up fighting, and then one person is the protector and one person doesn't want to know and one person is saying, you're dying from this, and you know what I mean? And it's just the ripple effect. It affects 10, maybe 20 more people. Do you know, it affects a lot of people, like, you know? So she's doing well now, friend. She's doing well, and she got, she was looking for the deposit then to go in, and she, I wouldn't trust her. So she was helped, the deposit was given to her by a charitable organisation, say, in the town. Will I say who helped her?
You can say who helped her, of course, yeah.
Yeah, the Vincent de Paul gave
fantastic.
Her the, you know, they were great.
Yeah, yeah.
And they sent a cheque, the deposit for her to get in, and I thank them, you know, they were marvellous to do that because I wouldn't trust her with the deposit.
I know, but you're, I understand, you know, because you were burned so often, I suppose.
That's right, yeah.
How big a problem in the area, from your point of view, Helen, is drugs in the Clonmel area?
Oh, it's huge, friend, huge. They're destroyed from it, you know, they're destroyed. People don't realise, you see.
Yeah,
sure, I didn't realise, friend. I didn't realise, you know, and my own daughter, I didn't realise. She was telling me all these stories. So I believed, you know, I didn't realise, friend. You see, mothers are stupid.
It's not that, but an awful
lot. I don't mean stupid,
no,
friend. I mean gullible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was kind of saying, I should have said, you know, I just didn't realise. I had my head in the sand.
But Helen, until Elaine Power brought me down to the soup kitchen, I wouldn't have believed it. I mean, I would
That's
not
right,
have believed
yeah.
it.
I know Elaine too. She's great. She does great work, Elaine Power. She does marvellous work.
In fact, she was brilliant. On to say that you're a fantastic woman yourself. She was just on to us there by text. But
well, she knows my voice.
She does indeed.
And I'm trying to put on an accent. Oh, God, friend. You couldn't put on an accent with this voice.
Listen, yeah. you sound
and
fine.
And Trudy did offer me to say, change your name. And I said, no, I won't change my name, sure. People know me, and you know they know, and that's it. Like,
but you're listening,
I don't know. I'm so delighted my daughter's in treatment.
And
you know?
It's only proud you should be of all
I'm
the
proud,
help that
and
you
she
gave.
Looks, you, if you saw her now, friend, she just looks absolutely fantastic.
Does she? Does she? So
I'm
she's back to her
now,
old self,
yeah.
Helen.
Oh, she looks absolutely fantastic, friend. You know, and to have her not, you know, to have her not on the street, and like I said, why wouldn't I go on the radio? When people were so good to help her, you know, people were so good to me, you know. And even my own family, like, they were always asking, how is she? And, you know, the whole lot, like, they were, you know, and she thought everybody hated her. So it's the things they get in their mind, you know. So I did, when I sent in the text, and then when Trudy rang me, I said, oh, I don't know, Trudy, could you change my voice, you know, because pride, you see, is a terrible thing, friend.
I know.
You know, the pride.
Well, why wouldn't you be proud? False
prideness.
But you were saying that Jacinta anyway and June, they were particularly good to you, and
they were very kind. Right. But they were better. I nearly gave her name. They were better to my daughter.
Oh, right. Well,
you know, they were making sure that she'd be okay, and they'd go down and if they got an answer, they'd tell me, and if they didn't get an answer, you know, and they'd be,
well,
you know, and they were genuine about it, friend. Totally genuine.
I figure,
you
Helen,
know?
There are angels out there, and those
there
people are certainly
they're,
among
they're
them.
They're great.
You know? Yeah.
I don't know, could I do what they're doing, you know, but there's people for different things in life, you know what I mean? There's people for different, and that's their thing in life. I can't think of the word. What is it, friend? You'll think of it because you're good at words. There's people for,
well,
you know the word I'm looking for.
Well, there's just people out there who are special people, and that's
special
what they
people,
do,
yeah,
you know.
Special people,
and that's
for
really
special areas of life, and they're brilliant at it, friend, you know. They're brilliant at what they do. They're lovely, and they're good, and they're kind.
Well, Helen, can I wish you and your daughter the very, very best, Helen, and it was very brave of you, and it was wonderful of you to come on with
and
us today.
And then I couldn't shut up, friend, when I started talking, right?
Well, listen,
okay.
I could listen to you all day. Look after yourself,
happy
Helen.
Happy Christmas, friend, and love your show. Thanks very much.
Very kind.
And happy Christmas to all at River Watch down there and the whole lot that do such good work.
Many happy returns to you,
right,
Helen, and to your daughter as well. Thank you very much indeed. Trudy, a lot of text in as well following Amy's piece there.
Yes, indeed. Lawal got in touch to say, "Hi, Fran. These women provide a fantastic service. They're all volunteers. They have their own families to look after and they're out every weekend. I personally am very grateful for what they do." And thank you, says Ella. Somebody else wants to know, "Could you please tell us where the soup kitchen is if somebody wanted to donate something?" And that came in from Jackie in Drangan. Another caller in a capital letter goes, "Fran, surely the rest, there should be more people that can help. Why is it left to three women?" Another person was in contact to say, "Foraging through bins in 2017 for cardboard. I give you our incredible glorious government. Sleep well, Leo." And then Margaret Toohey in Cashel got in contact to say, "Fran, great credit to that woman. Please God, she stays strong for her daughter, and great credit to all the people that helped her along the way." And that's Margaret Toohey in Cashel.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
A Tipperary man whose personal data was stolen from the car of a Department of Social Protection employee wants accountability in the case. The files, including PPS numbers of John Cash, together with those of three other people, were taken from a car park in Clonmel in 2014. And John is online with me. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, and good to talk to you. John, when did you first find out that your data was stolen from this this car?
Well, we found out, we were all notified by anonymous letter. So someone, a good Samaritan, found our information blowing around the car park. And our addresses, of course, were on, names and addresses, as well as PPS numbers, everything were on the sheets, so they posted them back to each of us. As far as I'm aware, that's the way I was notified anyway, and I presume the other three people were the same. I don't know who they are, of course.
Right, so this isn't somebody from the department that let you know. It was just an ordinary person who found the forms that were obviously thrown aside.
Yes, they had been stolen from the car and were just discarded in the car park, we presume, or whatever, you know.
Right. What did you do about that then, John?
Well, like, even in the data commissioner's findings, it says that we notified him. It was actually the Department of Social Protection that notified the data commissioner that there may have been a potential breach of data. So, because I presume they would be obliged to do that.
Right. But they didn't make contact with you initially, did they?
Well, they wrote back then to say that they had reported it to the guard and the guards were investigating the matter, and that they had also, we were informed also that the data commissioner had been notified that there may have been a potential breach of our data.
Now the ruling of the data protection commissioner was very profound, wasn't it?
Absolutely, the article appeared on the Journal yesterday, Fran, and immediately you had the keyboard warriors who were saying, "Oh, this fellow's only looking for money and compensation and go away and get a job for yourself," and, you know, all this. Just to make it clear to the people listening, I could have stayed anonymous. When the findings of the data commissioner were issued, I should have gone straight to a solicitor and looked for money, if money is what I want. I haven't had any contact with or gotten any legal advice regarding compensation or anything else. I want to be treated like a human being. Now, the department are saying they apologised to me in 2015. I want someone in the department to explain to me how you can apologise for something in July 2015, which was only brought into the findings of the data commissioner were only issued in December 2016.
It's interesting. And just to illustrate what you're saying there, the data protection commissioner ruled that the Department of Employment Affairs and Social Protection had failed to ensure that appropriate security measures were in place against the unauthorised access. Now, that's very damning, isn't it? And was there also a mention at that stage that you could be, there should be damages paid as well?
Well, that it may be entitled to, but I mean, I think that's actually the line which made them bolt for cover and bury their heads and hope that we would just go away.
Right.
I think when the data commissioner mentioned compensation, the Department of Social Protection decided, oh God, we better just hope that they don't come after us for compensation, so we're just going to ignore this. This is about treating people like victims. We were victims. I didn't ask anyone to put my information out into the public domain. I know, and compared to a lot of victims, it is a small thing. However, it still should be treated and handled properly. And to me, the department, all the government departments, seem to have their playbook. When they decide that they want to play it a certain way, and it doesn't matter about the victims as long as they cover their own backs. And that shouldn't be the case, I think, in 2017. Anyone who is affected in any way by mishandling of information or any other thing should be treated in a respectful way and treated like a human being.
There was also an issue, John, certainly on my reading of the article anyway, of whereabouts the information was. Some claims that it was locked into the glove compartment of the car, but you're making the point that possibly it was in a briefcase in the car.
Yeah, well, again, that's something. That's why, like I said, I could have said anonymous, but I came out and I'm asking questions because I want to make to try and ensure that if this happened to anyone else in the future, that they would at least tell the truth, because I believe that there is anomalies in what the data commissioner was told. Sorry, excuse me. I think that they were told initially that the information was locked in the glove box.
Mm.
But I was told, when I was apologised to, as they put it, in July 2015, that the information was in a briefcase on the back seat of the car.
So you got two completely opposite pieces of information there.
Absolutely, and that's why I think the department still owe me a sit-down where they explain all these anomalies and explain to me and look me in the eye and say, look, now that the data commissioner has found in your favour, we are really sorry, and we are sorry for the way we have handled this.
Didn't somebody sit down with you at some point or other and apologise?
Well, they sat me down, but they apologised. To me, their apology was they were apologising that I might have been in the position where my data was breached.
Right, okay. But
that's what I took from that meeting. I didn't feel I was apologised to because my data was breached. I was being apologised to because I had been put in this position where they had to report it to the data commissioner. But it was made quite clear to me at that meeting that I would have to wait until the findings of the data commissioner were actually issued.
And the culprit for the robbery, by the way, John, was anybody ever found for that?
Not that I'm aware of. Again, I've heard nothing about the Garda report or whether they were able to find anything. Like I said, it's just there's people out there now probably texting in saying, oh, what's the big deal? Why is this guy making such an issue of this? And I've no doubt you'll get those, and you'll get people as well who'll still say, oh, it's still about money, he's looking for compensation. So you can't do anything about those people, no matter how much you could say. All I can say to you, Fran, is that there are a number of charities that when I'm in a position to do, to help, that I have helped. And if I got compensation, those charities would be very, very happy people. And now that I've heard about the River Watch, that I would include those in that also.
Right. Well, you see,
it's
John,
not about money for me.
Yeah, but the department has a responsibility in relation to your data and to data protection.
Absolutely. And like, you know, people just remember this, that when this was issued in December 2016, our current Taoiseach was the Minister for Social Protection.
Mm.
And I'd love to know, I mean, we've gotten answers to nothing. I'd love to know, was he made aware that his department had actually had a breach of data and that this finding was made against them by the data commissioner? And finally, Fran, my issue is, what is the point of having a data commissioner who will issue findings like this if government departments feel that they can just ignore it? I don't see the point. I mean, why pay someone to do a job if the people who they find against can just ignore their findings and bury their head in the sand and hope that the people affected by that will just go away and stay quiet?
Yeah, I'm also intrigued, though. I'd love to know, is there a protocol in place when there is a breach of a security like that? You know, is there a line of command? Is there a structure to what they do in terms of how they let people know and within what time and all of that sort of thing? There doesn't seem to be much information there.
No, well, that's what I'm saying, Mike. I mean, since the findings, we have had no contact. The only letter I received was, they've already been apologised to, and we have taken on board the findings of the Data Commissioner. No explanation as to what the department were going to do, maybe to ensure that this wouldn't happen again, or no.
And have you any reason to believe that your information was used in any way?
Well, I don't, but sure, I mean, in this day and age, I mean, technically, they had enough information probably for to get a passport if someone who couldn't get a passport in their own name wants it. So you could have someone in another country using my name and information, for all I know. You know, they had, the department are saying, oh, we give you a new social security card with your photo on it.
But your number was the same, I presume.
But yeah, they said to me, oh, we can change your PPS number. However, then you would actually have to go to, I would have had to personally go and change every single thing, the bank accounts, everything, because I had a new PPS number. I would basically be becoming a new person.
So all right. So just briefly now, John, where do you take it from here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not getting any answers. I have written to Leo Varadkar.
Have you sought legal advice on this?
I haven't, to be honest with you, friend, because like I keep saying, to me, it's not about the money. And I will keep fighting this and I will keep looking for answers. It is nothing to do with compensation. And again, you'll get text that will say, oh, the way that, of course it is. It is about people actually in 2017 having the courtesy to treat the citizens of this country with a little bit of respect and answer their questions when they are asking questions.
All right.
It's as simple as that for me.
All right, John. Well, listen, good to talk to you today, and we wish you well for the future. And thank you for coming on with us this morning.